This talk is going to be, it's going to build upon work that was presented at last year's Systems Research Symposium in the AA division. But I will do a little bit of repeating for those who missed that presentation so you can be caught up to date on some of the methods and the background. To begin, I'd like to acknowledge our primary funding source, the USDA CSREES, from their funding through the National Research Initiative. So let's begin by talking about what a food shed is, because the term is probably not familiar to most of you. The earliest use that I know of is from a man by the name of Walter Hedden, who wrote a book called How Great Cities Are Fed in the 1920s. And he described food sheds this way, quote, "By analogy to watersheds, we may conceive of the flow of foodstuffs to consuming markets as determined by food sheds." So he sees them like watersheds, but where economic forces guide the flow from farm to consumer. And more recently, it's been used to describe the elements and properties of that preferred emergent alternative food system. And that's how Kloppenberg and others describe a food shed in their article, Coming Into the Food Shed. So it's a bit more of a conceptual model than a geographic model. But for our purposes, we were sticking more to the original definition. And for the sake of this research, a food shed is the area of land that feeds or could potentially feed a population. So why is this relevant? Well, I've got two major reasons I think it's relevant. And to start, I wanted to show this cover of Time magazine from a March issue where the cover article debated whether it was better to eat organic or eat local. And this really struck me because it means these ideas have hit the mainstream. And as researchers, I think it's important for us to find ways to assess the potential contribution of not only organic but local food to sustainability. And I think food sheds can help us to do that. The second is a more basic reason. At these meetings, we focused a lot on climate change and on energy production from agriculture, to a lesser degree on human health from agriculture. And in light of these new goals for agriculture, I think we need to focus on where food is produced, not only how food is produced. And food sheds will let us do that. So what were the objectives for this research? Well, we had three goals for this particular part of the food shed research. And the first two goals apply to the research I presented last year as well. The first was to create a general method for mapping potential food sheds that, although we applied it at the state scale, could be applied at different scales and could be a general basis for modeling. The second was to quantify the potential for New York's population centers to localize their food supplies, that is, to produce more of their food closer to the point of consumption. And we measured that both in how much food they could supply and what the change in distance would be. And finally, we wanted to use an economic arbiter to determine which types of foods could be grown locally or would be most likely be grown locally. And this third goal is different from the research I presented last year, because in our research we found that it was quite clear New York could not produce all of its own food, which didn't come as a surprise. But then you need to figure out, well, okay, which foods are most important or most likely to be grown locally. And that's why we use an economic arbiter. So what did we do? The model we used, I'm calling a hybrid spatial optimization model, because it uses geographic information systems to integrate a large quantity of data and very diverse data. And it uses optimization software to actually allocate the resources to the food need. So I'll talk you through this diagram. We call these data flow diagrams. And on the left, we're starting with the mostly raw input data. We used data on soils from Statsco, the State Soil Geographic Database, data on land cover from the National Land Cover Dataset, data on population from the Bureau of the Census, that's population distribution, and then data on diet, which was not spatial data, which was developed from some previous research trying to determine the land requirements of supplying different diets that met Food Guide Pyramid recommendations. So this data got funneled into two streams. On the top you see the soils and land cover being funneled into production zones. And those are essentially equal sized units that we divided the state into so that we had non-biased shapes of entities. And we used the soils and land cover data to determine the potential productivity of those zones. On the bottom, the data on population and diet was used to determine food need, population supplying the number of people and diet supplying the food need per person. We took that data, calculated the distance between these production zones, which supply food, and consumption zones, which take that food, added in some data on land use value, which I'll discuss more in a moment, and some data on transport costs, and fed that all into an optimization model that allocated the available land to meet the in-state food needs such that land use value was maximized. And the output you get when you run the optimization model is a food shed matrix that says how much land is allocated from each of these production zones to each of the consumption zones, and we can summarize that in tables or charts or in maps, which as a GIS person I'm very fond of. So it's important to discuss in a bit more detail the optimization equation. The goal, as I said, was to maximize total land use value derived from allocating land to agricultural production. And land use value, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a measure of the value of that land based on its annual returns to land and a capitalization rate. So maximum land use value is the total land use value in this model was equal to the sum of the area allocated from each production zone to each consumption zone from a given food group. And I'll discuss the groups in a minute. And then that's multiplied by the value of producing food, that food group, at a given productivity level and shipping it to a given consumption zone. And it was subject to two constraints. First, that consumption of food couldn't be greater than the food requirements, so cities couldn't eat more than they needed. And the second was that the land allocated couldn't be greater than the land available. And the asterisk there notes that there were separate limits for both annual and perennial crops to prevent allocations that would result in tilling more land than was sustainable for soil erosion purposes. So here are the agricultural classes I mentioned. We started with food groups as a starting point, but then tried to lump foods and crops that were economically and agronomically similar. We came up with six classes: vegetables, eggs, fruit, dairy, grains, and meat. And the table here shows food requirements from each of those groups in kilograms per person per year. I'm not going to talk about that much now. And the land use value per hectare, and the classes are arranged in descending order. What you can see clearly is that vegetables were the most valuable, followed by eggs, fruit, dairy, grains, and finally meat. Final part of our methods was that we used three scenarios to try to get at how consumers might differ in their responsiveness to eating locally. And scenario one assumes that consumers are willing to eat only foods that are produced in New York State. Scenario two assumes that people still want to eat things that either are out of season at certain times of the year in New York, or that are tropical and can't be produced in New York's temperate climate, and that that part of the diet would need to be imported. So there's a lower limit on what can be supplied in state. And scenario three we call a baseline. It's in which consumption of in-state food cannot exceed the current ratio of production to consumption. So it's an attempt at getting at what the current conditions look like in New York State. So now I'm going to share a few pieces of data. First, this table is giving you a statewide look at the results. It's showing the food supplied and the distance traveled. So in this table on the leftmost column, you've got the scenarios, S1, S2, and S3, the quantity of food supplied, the share of food needs satisfied, and the distance food traveled. I'm not going to talk much about the total food supplied, but I will talk about the share of food needs satisfied. And what we observed was a large range between the three scenarios, ranging from 36% of the total food needs of the state on a weight basis to 71% of the food needs on a weight basis. There was a lot less difference in the distance food traveled. It ranged between 231 kilometers and 267 kilometers. So that was much more similar. Another important piece of information to look at is how is the land allocated statewide by agricultural class. And this chart, this bar chart, shows the three scenarios on the y-axis and the proportion of available land allocated to each of these agricultural classes on the z-axis. And you'll notice there's six categories, but instead of meat being shown, there's a category showing unused land, and that is because no land was allocated to meat in any of the scenarios, but large portions were unused. So in all three scenarios, we have a large portion of unused land that was deemed economically marginal by the model. And of the land that was used, the largest share was devoted to dairy, and then the remainder was split between eggs, vegetables, fruit, and grains, with generally more land being allocated in the scenario where New Yorkers were willing to consume all local foods and less in the other two scenarios. Now, at the outset, I promised some mapping of food sheds, and the main goal of our research was to provide data at the population center level rather than a county or a statewide level. And what we see here is a map of potential local food sheds in New York State for six major population centers. I chose the six largest population centers in the state. And they are Buffalo, which is shown, let's see, over here in red. And then moving east, we have Rochester in green, Syracuse in orange, Albany in blue, Poughkeepsie Newburgh in yellow, and the Newark food shed shown in gray. And I'll note that the Newark population, which is in New Jersey, is not included in the model. The basic take-home message from this map is that the majority of the land is in gray, of the used land, which is going to the New York City food shed. And New York City is by an order of magnitude larger than all the other cities shown in this map. So that shouldn't come as a surprise. It also affects the amount of the area of land devoted to these other cities and the direction which they're grabbing land from. So from the results that I presented today, I have three take-home points. The first is that in New York State, localization potential appears to be high, at least on the basis of how many people we have relative to the amount of land we have and how that is distributed. So New York population centers could supply large shares of their food within a distance that's an order of magnitude shorter than that of the modern food system. Second, not all food is equal. And it appears that maximizing land use value favors high-value crops, eggs, and dairy, which is similar to actual New York agriculture. And finally, big cities matter. And if you have a megacity like New York in your region of analysis, that's going to affect all the other population centers. So in the future, we'd like to expand this work in a few directions, going from a state to a nationwide area, using more direct indicators of environmental impact, like greenhouse gas savings or energy use, and integrating with other analysis of how we might meet these other goals of energy production, climate change mitigation, and health. Thank you.